You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
The audience is going to be very excited about this. Very excited. There has been some thawing at the wall, and Tim Kirkshin makes his triumphant return to our
Tim.
He's so uncomfortable.
Too much pressure. I can't live up to this. Do anything.
Tim.
Stop it. Just ask me a question.
Okay. Very good. Who's the best team in baseball, according to Tim Kirkshin?
I think the Dodgers are the best team. You look at their ERA, it's going to be the lowest of any team in years. You look at their batting average against, it's going to be the second lowest in the history of the game in a season. Their offense is great. They lead the league in runs scored. They're going to throw three, probably four starting pitchers at you in the postseason, where I'm not sure how you get through, you know, Urias, Scherzer, Bueller, and Kershaw. I think they're the best team. The Giants are really good, but the Dodgers are the best team, if you ask me.
Tim, were you expecting anything close to this out of the San Francisco Giants?
No, I did not have them as a playoff team. I had them as a 500 team, but they're just following the formula, fellas. They throw strikes and they swing really hard at strikes, and that's how you win in today's game. They've got 10 guys with 10 or more homers. They can beat you 1-8 with a long ball. Their pitching is really good. Kevin Gausman is an ace, and they're way, way better than I thought. Again, the beauty of baseball is every year there's one team that comes out of nowhere and makes the playoffs. This team came out of nowhere, and they're going to win 106 games maybe. That's remarkable.
Who's got the best pitching headed into the playoffs?
Well, again, there's some really good teams out there. The Dodgers, I think, have the best pitching in baseball. But the Brewers, with those three starting pitchers that nobody can hit when they're right, and those two relievers at the end of the game, Williams and Hader, they might have the best five pitchers going into the playoffs. And remember, the Nationals won the World Series in 2019 basically using like five or six pitchers only And those guys ate up all the innings, pitched all the important innings. And that's why the Brewers are dangerous, is if you're going to see those three starters and they can get you to Williams and Hader, that's a pretty interesting group. So there's great pitching everywhere. And, of course, the Rays always have great pitching. And you never know how you're going to deal with them because relievers are starters and starters are relievers. So there's really good pitching heading into the postseason.
What would you have said to me before the season if I said the Brewers this year without Christian Yelich are going to be playoff good, pitching dominant good?
Wouldn't have seen it. He just went 29 games in a row without hitting a home run, and they're winning this division easily. That simply can't happen. I didn't see the Brewers being this good or close to this good when the season began. But those three pitchers have gotten, you know, Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta have gotten better and better every start this year. So, and I have an NL MVP vote this year, and I can't even figure out who the MVP of the Brewers is. And they're still winning their division easily and still a very dangerous team in October. So it's a fascinating team to watch.
Timmy, who's the American League team that if they met the Dodgers in the World Series would give them the toughest series?
Well, I still think it's the Rays, because the Rays are the best team in the American League for me. Just the way they play the game, it's corny, but they don't make mistakes. They don't give outs away. They hit the ball out of the ballpark. They strike people out. They play the game better than any team in the major leagues. They don't have as many good players, but their 25th player is better than anybody else's 25th player. Their 20 through 25 are clearly better than any other 20 through 25 out there, because everyone on that team plays and everyone is a good player. I learned this from doing the Rangers many, many years ago. They had like the five best players in the game all together, you know, with Ryan and Gonzalez and Pudge and Palmeiro. But after that, they weren't very good. This is the strength of the Rays, is they 25 guys on their team can beat you, and no other team is built quite like them.
Tim, what has happened in baseball this year that has most enraged you?
Enraged is way too strong, but again, the strikeout rate, fellas, we've been over this for 10 years, especially the last 5 years. The strikeout rate is just too high, and it upsets me that we have too many strikeouts. And it upsets me that our players today are bigger, stronger, faster, and better than ever. And they run the bases worse than I've ever seen in the 42 years that I've covered. There is no excuse for running the bases and not having a feel for the game like we seen this year and in recent years. But this year has been ridiculous. The number of plays that I've seen where I just slap my forehead. Mr. Keene would have taken me off the field when I was 16 years old if I had made some of the mistakes that the big leaguers made. He would have taken me out of the game. And I was 16, and these guys are big leaguers. It can't happen, and that's the one thing that upsets me. We got to do a better job understanding how to play the game.
Tell me more about Mr. Keene.
Everything, actually.
All right, he recently died. He was my coach growing up. My dad was my coach, of course, but he was the real coach, Mr. Keene. And he was tough to play for. He was tough to deal with. But when he died less than a year ago, his son, who I played with all those years, just called me and we talked about it, that Mr. Keene made us all better. He screamed at us and he made us feel terrible certain days, but he made us better players. And he used to also open the gym on Sunday mornings at Walter Johnson High School where I went. I don't know how he did it, but he opened the gym and just brought, you know, some kids, including me, into play every Sunday morning at a high school gym when I was like 10 years old. That's where my true love for basketball developed, from Mr. Keene. So my father taught me everything I need to know about baseball and basketball, but Mr. Keene made things happen that gave us more places to play and to practice.
He had a keen eye for talent, is that right?
He did, and he was a left-handed thrower and a right-handed hitter. And that always fascinated me, like Ricky Henderson. And I always thought, you know, why is Mr. Keene like this? But he was a great athlete himself. So when you did something poorly, he could show you how to do it. He would say, here's how you hit that ball on the inside part of the plate. Here's how you throw your curveball. And he was just great because he could teach us how to do it because he was such a great athlete.
Did he teach you how to bunt?
Yeah, yeah, he did. You know, we would all wrap our fingers around the bat, and he would teach us you can't bunt that way, and he showed us the proper way to bunt. And by the way, let's go over this again. None of you guys could ever get a bunt down in a major league game against Garrett Cole. It's impossible.
I could lay one down.
Yeah, me too. I absolutely can.
Need to remind you.
He would buzz the tower, then you would be done because you'd be too afraid. But even if he didn't, you could not get a bunt down against Garrett Cole, period.
Tim, easily, I could get a bunt down.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Just stick the bat out there, Tim,
you're this baseball historian, so maybe you've heard of the 1998 West Kendall Optimist Seattle Mariners. We were undefeated, my friend. I went by Billy Bunt because that's what I would do, bunt. Undefeated.
But Billy, the big difference is you couldn't hit. Everybody today can hit. Everybody today can hit the ball out of the ballpark. So they're not about to give up an out with a bunt, potential out, when they have a chance to hit a three-run homer. And the industry is telling them, we don't want you to bunt because you might hit a three-run homer. So yes, back in the late 90s, all sorts of people knew how to bunt. But since then, since all we care about is hitting the ball out of the ballpark, no one is taught to bunt. And then when they don't get a bunt down in October at the most important time, we wonder, why can't you bunt? Well, we didn't bunt from April through September. How in the world are we going to get something down in October?
Bingo.
It's a damn shame the game's lost the bunt. Am I right, Tim?
Yeah, I used to love to watch Rod Carew bunt. He's the best bunter I've ever seen. Brett Butler
better
was a great
Juan
bunter.
Pierre?
Juan Pierre was a great bunter, but Rod
top five bunters.
Top five bunters. Let's do it. Hold on. We got to do it from the bottom to the top. A top five list is broken out of nowhere. We are targeting Tim Kirkchen's
top seven.
Top five bunters. Why top seven?
Because we know one and two already. He gave us those.
I mean, you're assuming that Juan Pierre was in his top five.
JP.
Top seven.
Okay. Top seven bunters, according to Tim Kirkchen. You know Brett Butler's going to make an appearance somewhere on this list. Number seven, Tim Kirkchen.
All right, Vic Davalio was number seven.
Yes.
He would drag the ball down the first baseline better than anyone, and I still think a drag bunt can only be achieved by a left-handed hitter because you are dragging the ball towards first base. When a right-handed hitter drops a bunt down the third baseline, I do not refer to that as a drag bunt because you're not dragging it to first. So Vic Davalio was the best I've ever seen at dragging the ball to first base.
Dragging it.
Number six.
Hold on a second.
When you're drag bunting, you're going for a hit, right? That's the deal. You're going for a hit.
And when you're dropping a bunt down the third baseline and you're clearly bunting for a hit, but I don't call it a drag bunt. I say he dropped a bunt down the third baseline. So it's semantics, but
That's the verb. Guillermo, put it on the poll. Can you drag a bunt if you're not doing it left-handed? Number six, Tim.
Number six is Paul Blair. Mm. I grew up watching him on the Orioles, and nobody, and I mean no right-handed hitter, has ever dropped a bunt down the third baseline better than Paul Blair. He hit it. You didn't even know he was going to bunt. And then he got the bat out in front of him. That's how you drop a bunt down the third baseline as right-handed hitter. Instead of behind you, he would drop a bunt down the third baseline better than any right-handed hitter I've ever seen. Mm.
Number five.
Number five is Eddie Collins. He holds the major league record for most. He's a Hall of Famer, lifetime well over 300.
Wow.
He had 511 sacrifice bunts in his career.
Wow, what an achievement.
No one else has ever had 400 sacrifice bunts.
Eddie.
511. And Frank Thomas had over 10,000 plate appearances and has the most plate appearances ever without a sacrifice bunt. So Ed Collins, number five.
He is back.
Tim, we can agree that sacrifice bunt and bunting for hits, totally different skill sets.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Yes. Rod Carew was not bunting to move anyone over. He was bunting to get a hit. We'll get to him in a minute.
Number four. Yes, whoa, we teaser. Will. I love that he's been waiting for this list his entire life. Number four.
And number four is, again, from my childhood, Tommy McCraw.
Oh, yeah.
Who did some pretty good things for the White Sox and became the hitting coach for the Orioles. I'm not making this up, fellas. I watched him at least three times as a kid literally throw his bat at a ball, deaden it. As he's running to first, he literally flips his bat at the ball, made it go in fair territory, and got a hit. And there was not even close play at first because he's already running to first when he literally throws the bat at the ball. I saw him do that three times when he was a young player and I was a young kid.
If your name, Tommy McGraw, you were born to bunt. I mean, that goes
it's
without
Tommy
saying.
Tommy McCraw.
Whatever.
Even better. Tommy Mac.
I mean, number, before we get to number
born
three,
to bunt.
Real quick. I need the audience to understand, as we're in the middle of this, how difficult this is as an entertainment achievement. Tim Kirkson is talking about players that you do not know. And there has to be, you're obligated to have a giant smile on your face. Number three, Tim Kirkson.
Well, number three, and you guys gave it to me, but he was always in the top three, is Juan Pierre. So in Philadelphia, I want to say 15 years ago at the old stadium, I got to a game at 12:30. The game started at 7. Of course, I'm the only one in the ballpark, but I get there because I have work to do. And Juan Pierre is out on the field at the old vet, and he at 12:30 in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock start, and he is rolling balls down the third baseline. Oh. It was the first game of the series. And I asked him, like, before the game, what were you doing at 12:30? He goes, well, every ballpark is different. I'm a great bunter. I'm going to bunt tonight. So I needed to roll the ball down the third baseline and see which direction it was rolling, because certain teams would doctor the third baseline if they knew a good bunting team was in, and they would fix the dirt. So if you rolled it on the dirt, it would roll into foul territory because they knew a good bunting team was in. So Juan Pierre is number three because he was rolling bunts down the third baseline at 12:30 in the afternoon.
Gym rat.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Can you be a gym rat in baseball? Have you ever had a work ethic that you've seen in that sport better than Juan Pierre's? Can you name anybody ever? Because it's the best one I've seen in that sport.
Well, Ichiro was pretty high on the list. And the times he would hit, I mean, he would have to hit at a certain time every day. And the way he took care of his equipment, he never, ever threw his bat. If you ever watch him make an out, he never threw it. He never, like, jammed it into the bat rack. He took care of his bats. He once told me, he said, a good carpenter would never throw his best hammer anywhere. You treat your bats like gold because they're your livelihood. So he never threw his bats around, and his work ethic was ridiculously high.
Number two.
Well, Brett Butler is number two for me because he was a little guy. In fact, I once asked him where he got his number from, why he wore number two. And he once told me that everyone told him he was too small to play because he's a little, little guy. He probably weighed 150 when he played in the big league. So he always had a two on his back because everyone told him he was too small to play all those years. And he also wore number two, he told me, because he's the smallest guy in the field and any sort of big number would look stupid on his back. So he also told me that he bunted, I'd never looked this up, successfully 48% of the time. So people talk all the time, why would you give up an out? When he bunted, he got a bunt single 48% of the times that he bunted. And he used to tell, like, the young guys on the Marlins, including D. Gordon, would you take, D. Gordon says, I'm not giving up an out by bunting. And Brett Butler said, hey, if you can get on 48% of the time by bunting, wouldn't you do it? And he said, well, of course I would. Well, that's how Brett Butler got D. Gordon to bunt a little bit more often.
And he was so skilled, they called him Brent Buntler. Is that right?
No.
Yeah, it was.
Brett Buntler.
That's right.
No, they didn't. But I watched him. I can't tell you how many times before games I watched him practice that. He would be out there by himself on the field practicing his bunting all by himself, just him and a coach, and he would be pushing them down the third baseline and to repeat, dragging them down. I mean, third baseline, he'd push it, drag it down the first baseline.
You're being belligerent with this dragging, incessant dragging.
No, it's important.
It is. You need to calm down because you're being aggressive with it. And while I've missed you, I have not missed this part of your personality, which is always unpleasant and combative and covered in barbed wire.
Okay. That was Brett Butler, number two.
Number one, you already told us a little bit of anticlimax. Regardless, you can weave a tapestry on whoever number one is.
Well, Rod Carew is one of the great hitters of all time, lifetime 328, greatest number 29 of all time. And that's a pretty interesting list there with John Smoltz and some others. But I saw Rod Carew. He once told me years ago that he could bunt a ball into like a bucket, a pail that you could put on the field, and he could bunt a ball into the pail. And I thought he meant, you know, you put the pail on the ground. He said, no, the pail could be standing up like on its regular feet and he could bounce a bunt into a bucket. I've never saw him do it, but he said he did that. He's done that before. That's how good he was at bunting. So you look at those years, you know, when he hit, you know, 390, 385, whatever he hit, it's because he would get a bunch of bunt hits every year.
Wow. Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Don Levitard.
I got somebody here making fun of me. How old do you have to be to reference Shecky Green? Man, I went comedically there with the funny name of a comedian. Mm-hmm. That's on you for not knowing who Shecky Green is.
Oh, you
got
to know who Shecky Green
no,
is.
No, you don't have to know who Shecky Green is. But
your ally.
I don't like my allies.
King
here.
Of the Borscht Belt.
Stugatz.
I have the soul of a Borscht Belt comedian. I should be in the Catskills in 1945. Opening for Shecky Green. That's who I was destined to be.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Who is the best bunting pitcher of all time?
Good
and why
question.
Is it Greg Maddux?
Well, Greg Maddux was the best all-round pitcher in every single way. So he was a good hitting pitcher. He was a really good bunter. He was the best fielding pitcher I've ever seen, better even than Jim Cott, which is really saying something. And this is really deep inside baseball. He never threw a pitch straight if he didn't want to. But on the 1-6-3 double play, Walt Weiss, who was the shortstop in Atlanta, told me that Greg Maddux threw the straightest ball to second base on the 1-6-3 double play of any pitcher ever. So here Greg Maddux is throwing a pitch with a grip that is going to intentionally move in some direction. And yet, bouncer back to him, he adjusts his grip and throws the straightest ball ever to the shortstop for the 1-6-3 double play. That's why Greg Maddux was the pitcher that he was, is every part of the game he was great at, except holding runners. He didn't care about holding runners because he used to always say the most important guy is the guy at the plate. If you worry too much about that guy at first, you're not going to get the guy out at the plate. And he said, and if he steals second, I don't care because I'm getting the next guy out anyway.
Tim, has there been a slugger, a home run hitter who was great at bunting?
Well, Jackie Robinson wasn't exactly a slugger, but he had, I believe it was 28 sacrifice bunts his rookie year. So he wins the rookie of the year. He has a great season. And granted, the game was completely different in 1947. But you don't think of Jackie Robinson and think that he had 28 sacrifice bunts. He was a great bunter in every way. Not too many. And again, power hitters today wouldn't even consider bunting at all. Just, and this is off the topic as always, but Shohei Ohtani had a 2-triple game the other day at a time when he had 45 homers. So I checked the last time anybody who had a 40 homer season had 2 triples in one game. And it was David Ortiz in 2004. And before that, it was Brady Anderson in 1995. So I found it odd that a guy with 45 homers would get 2 triples in one game, but that's because Ohtani is one of the fastest players in baseball.
Would Steve Garvey be the closest thing to a power hitter who was also a good bunt, a great bunter?
Yeah, he could drop it down the third baseline pretty well.
I love how obsessed are with bunting.
Garvey was good. He was,
but we're talking 1970s baseball. Go ahead. Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Steve Garvey wasn't a classic power hitter. He didn't even hit 300 homers, but he was a great bunter. But again, back in those days, people were asked to bunt. I watched a game in 86 in Baltimore, covered it, when Wally Joyner, who was in the middle of Wally World, the height of his greatness as a rookie, he bunted in the first inning for the Angels. And he's hitting third in the lineup. In the first inning, he dropped the sacrifice bunt because Gene Mauch always thought, we're going to get ahead. And the team that gets ahead usually wins. And that's how they did it. So, but we don't bunt anymore. That's obvious.
I hereby call upon Major League Baseball to inaugurate a bunting award, an annual bunting award, that's to be named in honor of Tim Kirchen, and the winner receives a bunt cake.
You are on an amazing hot streak of just remarkably shitty jokes. Just breathtaking.
Keep them coming.
Breathtaking in being purposely bad jokes. Tim, have you ever given anyone the middle finger?
I did in a car once. Yeah. I told you guys I'm not as patient in a car as I should be. But there was a guy behind me with his brights on, and come on, it's nighttime. The brights are so you can barely see out of the car, and he's just purposely putting his brights on behind me. And when he passed me, I had to let him know that's unacceptable.
Do you go out the window?
That might be the only time.
Tim, do you go out the window with the bird, or is the bird staying inside the window?
No, I'm not opening the window. He's going to get the message with the window closed.
Was it above the window? I mean,
yeah, I'm pretty sure he saw it, and I'm pretty sure he didn't care. But I think to be considerate and respectful of other people, you shouldn't drive with your brights on right behind somebody else when it's not necessary.
Do you go thumb out or tucked thumb?
Yeah. tucked thumb.
Side saddle, or just one independent finger telling someone to bleep off?
Give us the finger.
Give it to us.
I, I, No, I'm not going to give it to you. I think you do have to thrust it forward
right.
to show how angry you are as opposed to just this. Like, hey, I don't really don't care. I'm just going to, you got to really like.
But is it just
right
one finger that's out there or the two knuckles side saddle on the neck? You know, do we have on the sides there? Are you raising the index finger and the ring
show
finger?
Show us with your ring finger.
Give us the finger, Tim.
It's an uppercut motion, right, Tim?
Right. I would go like this. Now, you guys know how big my hands are, so I have really long fingers for a tiny little old man. So my middle finger is well seen, especially when it is thrust at another person.
Wow. Okay, thank you. We appreciate the analysis.
Wow. How did it feel, Tim?
I was not... that was not a satisfying feeling. I was not real happy with my... performance. It was not necessary, but he should not have had his brights on right behind me.
I imagine that you're riddled with guilt and that it doesn't leave like in minutes. It's going to sit there for a couple of hours because your rage got the best of you. And I imagine that that's a guilt that you carry.
Not anymore. I mean, it was 10 years ago, so
I don't mean today. I just mean, how long does that stay with you when you lose your temper and you do something that's uncharacteristically, you know, curtain?
All right. I had a little trouble with that one.
You showered when you got home.
I kind of dropped to his level, which was that didn't make me any better than him. That's the old cliche. Mm-hmm.
Top five number 29s, according to Tim Kirkchin. We are so delighted to have him back that we are hogging all his time. We will end this with a bit of a depleted batch of looks like because we haven't been tending to this game, but we will do the looks like game in a second with Tim Kirkchin. But first, we've got to get our top five number 29s because, Stugatz, Mike whispered in my ear while we were talking. And he asked me the question, can anybody in the world do what he is doing right now with this level of expertise where you're talking about the sacrifice bunts of Jackie Robinson in 1947? No. And my answer to him was, no, I don't believe that there's anybody in the world who can do that. But you should hear these conversations with him and Mike Schur because they are delightful descents into this world where it sounds like 2 8-year-olds talking about a thing that they've never stopped loving. And it is. Tim, I hope that I can get you on with him so people can hear more of these because we're just smiling around here nonstop to have you back. So let's go top five, number 29s with Tim Kirkchin. Number five, Tim.
I don't think I can do this. You know, I let me just explain. I've done what I called from Ozzie to Oral, the greatest players of all time, number 1 through 55, Ozzie Smith to Oral Hershiser. But what I do is I always, once I get to 2, or and if there's no competition like 24 with Willie Mays, I usually stop because there's no point in going on. I was just telling you that, you know, Carew was 1, Smoltz was 2, but now I'm going to have to come up with 3 other 29s. I don't think I can do it, and I might not even have their numbers right, but I'm trying to do this off the top of my head. Okay, number 5 is Vince Coleman.
Wow.
And I hope he wore number 29. I'm not even 100% sure.
It's okay,
about
Tim.
That.
You don't need to apologize or feel bad about this. Okay, this is very difficult. What we're doing to you is not terribly fair. You don't have a computer, and I've ratcheted up the stakes. So it's okay if you get some of these numbers wrong.
He wore number 29 4 separate times in his career. When he was a Rookie of the Year with the Cardinals, when he was an All-Star with the Kansas City Royals. He played for the Seattle Mariners wearing number 29, and he also played for the Tigers in 97 wearing number 29.
You're good, Tim.
Okay, number 4. God, this could be so embarrassing. Tim Wallach is number 4. His nickname was Eli. He was a really good third baseman for the Expos. So I'm going to go Tim Wallach, number 4, and I hope he wore 29.
He did wear number 29. What a great head of hair as well. Remember him, Dana?
Number, I do. Thank you. Number 3.
Again, I'm guessing Chris Carpenter is number 3, and I'm praying he wore number 29.
Oh, but there's going to be a lot of upset legends at your list right
Fred
now.
Fred McGriff is going to get mad, right?
Oh, God. Crime dog. Now, he wore 27 more than 29, I believe.
Wore 29, all right,
Chris, Chris Carpenter's number 3. I'm sticking with it. He was great. He was a great big game pitcher.
Number 2.
Number 2 is John Smoltz, first ballot Hall of Famer. John Smoltz came up to me in Miami once, just absolutely, he couldn't see straight. He goes, I know I've walked more than any active pitcher. And then he looks at me, he goes, you're the kind of guy that can find something like that, right? So I checked it out very quickly, and John Smoltz had walked more at that time than any major league pitcher. And he was so excited. He like jumped in the air. Yes, I knew I'd done that. And then later on, Tom Glavin passed him because Glavin remained a starting pitcher and Smoltz went to the bullpen, so he didn't get to bat very often. But he was so excited to find out that, yes, he thought he had led among walks by pitchers, and he was right. So John Smoltz is number two.
Number one, you've already told us, is Adrian Beltre an omission or?
No, I forgot. Adrian Beltre, you guys are right. I told you, you blindsided me, you ambushed me. I didn't get it right.
It's okay.
Because Rod Carew still has
anger. It's okay. Calm down, please.
Right. Catfish Hunter.
Sorry. Adrian Beltre needs to be very good. Adrian Beltre needs to be number three on this list.
So who was three? Who's getting bumped off? Who's
Carpenter.
Five?
Carpenter gets bumped off. Carpenter moves to
where's
four.
Jason Schmidt?
Vince Coleman
is
out.
Jason Schmidt?
No, that was a short run. The Jason Schmidt run wasn't long enough.
It was a good run.
It was a good run. It was a great run, but it wasn't Carpenter.
Reeks.
Tim's furious right now. Look at him.
He really is.
I feel bad because Adrian Beltre is a great third baseman, one of the
Tim. We've got the entire internet. Okay, we're looking this stuff up while you're talking.
Hall of Famer,
and Adrian's going to be fine, Tim.
I promise you're doing this from memory. And now, while we're at it, Tim, just because this is so much fun, I want to start with number 55 and give the people what they want right now. I want best player by position, by name, up to number 55. I want to do it in the reverse order. Are you ready to do it? Just names. You don't have to give us information on each one.
I mean, we all know number one is Rod Carew, but he never said it, Dan.
Right.
Well, real quickly on Adrian Beltre, he never wore a cup, which is just amazing to me. The position he played, he never wore a cup playing third base. I asked him, how could you do that? And then he looks at me and he shows me his hands and he goes, that's what these are for.
Ballsy.
Went, wow. Oh,
yeah, that did take balls.
All right. I haven't done From Ozzy to World in a long time.
All right. It's okay. But before you do that, I just want to make you giggle because you're someone that we delight in making giggle. And you've been giggling about this for a long time. So since you mentioned Adrian Beltre doesn't wear a cup, it reminded us quite obviously of one of your favorites. Mo, you're on 790.
I don't know if you know that Julio Franco used to play in Mexico City before he was called up by the Braves.
See.
And so I'm from Mexico City, and I was producing the post-game show of the Mexico City Tigers. He was crushing the league at the time. He had like five home runs that day. He was batting 580 something. So I sent this Latino girl to do the interview after the game because he had a huge game. And she got into the dressing room, and she came out, you know, the Latino skin, it's kind of light brown, and she came out of the dressing room whiter than Hubie Brown. So I said, what's wrong? And she said, no, please, you need to make this interview, I can concentrate. So I went in with the microphone and everything, and Julio Franco was interviewed naked. Man, it was the biggest monster that I've ever seen, okay?
What do you have for us, Tim, on Ozzy to Oral, Oral to Ozzy? This is too hard. What we're demanding of you here?
I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try. And again, this is my list. It's not the correct list. It's not the only list. It's my list.
You don't have to give us, we could just go names. You don't have to give us something on everything if you can do this, but can you do it backwards from 55 down, you think, or is that too hard?
I've never tried it backwards before, so, all right. Oh boy. This is really going to be hard.
Oral's
55.
Mm-hmm.
Gossage is 54. Drysdale is 53. D.C. Sabathia is 52. Randy Johnson is 51. 50 is really tricky. I think it's Adam Wainwright now over J.R. Richard, but Mookie Betts climbing very quickly, so that's very, very tricky to know who's going to be 50. But I'm going to go I'm going to go Adam Wainwright, and then a couple of years, we're going to go with Mookie Betts.
The horse.
Fluid.
49 is Hoyt Wilhelm. 48 is Torrey Hunter, although I think somebody's catching him among actives. Not sure. 47 is Tom Glavine. 46 is Lee Smith. 45 is either Bob Gibson or Pedro Martinez. Please,
wow,
somebody break that tie. I'm going to go with Bob Gibson, although that's really debatable. I love Bob Gibson. but Dusty Baker once asked Hank Aaron about Bob Gibson. He goes, what's Gibson like? And Hank Aaron says, young Dusty Baker, he said, whatever you do, don't talk to him. Whatever you do, don't stare at him. And if he knocks you down, don't charge the mound because he will beat your ass. That was Bob Gibson.
Hammer and Hank.
All right. 44 is Hank Aaron. 43 is Dennis Eckersley.
Eck.
42 is Jackie Robinson for obvious reasons. 41 is Tom Seaver. I'm going to do this. 40 is... Bartolo Colon.
Wow. Shocker.
39 is, oh my God, I'm going to have to come back to that.
All right, don't worry about it. It's okay, Tim. Tim, you're on a hot streak.
Billy brings up a very interesting debate on the number 42, though.
Yeah, that's an interesting debate because Mariano Rivera wore number 42, of course.
What else do you have? Is that what you had, Billy? Mariano Rivera?
I just said Mariano Rivera, number 42.
Mo.
I mean, Tim's not going to be the one to take it away from Jackie Robinson.
No, I think it has to be Jackie Robinson. Oh my God! I got to do the radio at 9:35.
Okay,
oh
get God. Out of here. We got to give you some looks likes. We got to give you some looks like. Are you ready? We've wasted enough of your time.
I'm late for the radio.
We're gonna waste more. Right,
rapid fire.
Does Vic Fangio look like he owns a plumbing supply company in Brooklyn?
Thanks.
Does Dan Orlovsky look like the devil in a young adult dramedy made for the CW? Does Arthur Blank look like he has a trick up his sleeve that will inevitably fail when he sees Dick Tracy? Does Jay Glazer look like the guy at the strip club who walks your party to your VIP table?
Yes.
See you later, Tim.
To go.
We love you. We love you. We love you.
Timmy!
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.